Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, hello, everybody. How's it going? New week, no location. Who dis? Hope everyone had a great weekend. I certainly did. Not very often are you the top story of your own show, but I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit today. This is from MMA Fighting. They wrote up an amazing article, so thank you to them for that. Thank you to everyone else also who gave me shout outs over the weekend. Let me just divulge for those of you who do not know what I experienced this past weekend. I actually am now known as a trailblazer, a history maker. I just became, unexpectedly, did not have this on my 2024 bingo card. I just became the first ever female octagon announcer in UFC history. It was a wild night. So let me just break it down for you how it occurred. I was working the UFC fight night. I do that once, twice a month, as you all know. I was going about my normal reporting responsibilities. That's nothing new to me. I was about to jump on headset with the commentary team to preview one of the fights that was about to occur. And next thing I know, one of my producers comes up to me. He's the executive producer of the show that night. And he was like, hey, we have a bit of a bind that we're in. We don't know if Joe Martinez, the Octagon announcer, is going to be able to continue because he's sick and his voice is very quickly giving out and he's just feeling horrible. Do you think you can jump in and replace him? And I'm looking at Lappy, my producer, like, what I'm looking at the camera like right now, like, I don't even know if I had words. And he could see that I was feeling a bit out of sorts. And he's like, listen, if you're uncomfortable, you don't have to do it. And I was having a moment of panic because that's a tough job. And I've never done that for UFC before. And I didn't want to screw up. I mean, this was being televised on ESPN. It wasn't, you know, some tiny fight night where it was just being digitally streamed. This was on ESPN. Obviously, it's being streamed to an international audience as well through the app. So I'm like, okay, I don't know if I'm comfortable. And that's what I told him. I said, I don't think I'm comfortable, which is not like me because you all probably get the vibe from me that I'm usually down to do anything and everything. But I just didn't want to screw up. So that's the decision that I made. He walked away. He's like, okay, we got to find another solution because we are moments away from having someone to have to make this next announcement. Next thing you know, my makeup artists for UFC, they're sitting right there as this whole conversation was going down. And they look at me and they're like, Charlie, what are you doing? Why would you say no? You're so talented. You're such a professional. You know how to do this. You'll be fine. You got to say yes. And I just had this moment of clarity, and I was like, you know what? I do have to say yes. I can't say no, especially because I knew the team needed me, right? Like, they were in such a bind. This was a major pinch. So I had them swing back around, and I was like, okay, I can do it. We've got this. And they helped to prep me, and even Joe Martinez, greatest guy, sat down with me. Again, he's feeling like complete crap. And he helps to prep me, goes through every little detail that I would need to know, because, of course, you got to have very specific verbiage when you are first giving the results to a fight. And then also when you're going into the intros, you got to have their height, their weight, where they're fighting out of, their nicknames, the proper pronunciations. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a certain cadence. All of this is happening, no joke, within maybe 3 minutes until I have to actually execute his job for the very first time. So anyways, that was it. I had to do what had to be done, and here is how it went.
Ladies and gentlemen, this bout is scheduled for 3 rounds in the UFC light heavyweight division. In the blue corner, a mixed martial artist standing 6'3" tall. Official weight, 204.5 pounds, with a professional record, 15 wins, 3 losses. From Dushkent, Uzbekistan, Bogdan Zhurevich Guskov. And in the red corner, a mixed martial artist standing 6'5" tall. Official weight, 205 pounds. With a professional record, 21 wins, 9 losses. Fighting out of Beaumont, Texas, by way of Memphis, Tennessee, Ryan Superman Spann! Your referee in charge, Herb Dean.
That was actually the first time that I've listened to that back. I am very much one of those people. I hate listening and watching myself on TV. Like, that goes across all platforms. I just always have, like, the most critical things to say about myself, because I guess it's just how us TV people generally are. I know a lot of people that don't like to watch themselves back. So that's the first time that I've actually listened to myself, and I'm not mad at it. You know, obviously, I am by no means a professional. I am no Joe Martinez. I am no Bruce Buffer. But okay, I will take it. That's cool. So yeah, I had no idea even at the time that this was a history-making moment. I thought I was just filling in. I know there are so many other very talented females that work for UFC, and I just had no idea that this was a history-making moment. And so then afterwards, when I am getting on social media, you know, following what just happened, my phone is blowing up. Like, I am getting messages from all sorts of people. I am getting followers left and right. Like, all these new people are congratulating me. And then next thing I know, I pull up this post, and it talked about how I just became the first ever female octagon announcer in UFC history. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. I just never imagined I would be someone to make history. So I'm feeling very proud of myself. I'm very, very thankful for the UFC team for supporting me through this. And more so than anything else, it wasn't just the support, you know, being able to help me out in those very few moments leading up to when I actually had to do this. But the confidence that they gave me is something that I will forever be thankful for, because, like I said, I was ready to say no. I was not comfortable. It was scary for me, and everybody around me, the makeup artists who I said initially were like, you can do this, Lappy, my producer, my other producer backstage, RJ, Joe Martinez, all of them were just so believing in me and gave me the confidence that I needed to get up there and become the first female octagon announcer in UFC history. So that's my story. Super cool. And I just want to also say thank you to everybody else who has reached out over the course of the entire weekend. It really does mean so much to me to have the support from so many people who I respect and admire. I'm getting messages from people I never imagined I would hear from in my life. So it's a pretty cool thing to experience. But now let's bring in another woman who I totally respect. Outkick contributor Amber Harding is here to, chime in and talk about me, Amber. What do you want to say about me?
I was sitting at home on Saturday night, and one of my friends texted me, and they were like, oh my gosh, Charlie is doing the Octagon announcing. And I was like, no way. So I turned it on. Kudos to you for that name of the guy from Uzbekistan, because that alone would have sent me into a tailspin. Just the pronunciation, that was impressive.
Yeah, the pronunciations are, I mean, so many different UFC fighters. They come from all over the world. And the person I always admire the most, because he is like the consummate professional when it comes to knowing the names, is John Anik. Basically, if you don't know how to pronounce someone's name, you ask John Anik, because he gets them all down to like the tiny little accents on top of the letters. He just is so good at it. But that was another thing. I said the name over a couple of times before I got up there, but in my mind, I was like, Charlie, please just don't screw this up. Like, and I guess one of the tricks that they always tell you in TV is just say it with confidence, you know, quick and confident. If you don't necessarily know how it's supposed to be said, just say it quickly and confidently, and most of the time people will not pick up on it. It's when you kind of stammer your way through something or say it with less confidence that people pick up if there is some type of error anyways. But thank goodness I got the names right, and thank goodness the secondary fighter's name was Ryan Spann, because that is something that I could easily understand how to pronounce. So yeah, pretty cool moment there. Also, Amber, pretty cool moments happening earlier this week. The NFL draft went down, and there was some really cool moments, some really emotional moments, some really funny moments. One funny moment that I know you will appreciate in particular because it had to do with the Miami Dolphins was when Patrick McMorris hung up on the Dolphins during the draft because he thought it was a spam call, which we can all relate to. The spam calls are out of control these days. Like, truly, I get spam calls more than I actually get real calls from people that I know. So I can relate to this. And I was talking about this with Clay Harbor before the draft took place. And I was like, what happens if you get a call and you don't know it's them? Do you just pick up every call? And he's like, well, that happened to me where he didn't know and he picked it up anyways, thank goodness. How funny though, right? He hung up on the GM because he thought that it was a spam call.
Yeah, I sympathize with him because I get so many every single day, and they've gotten more clever. So they will call me. These spam numbers will call me from 317 area code, which is Indianapolis, where I'm from,
yes,
or 615 in Nashville, where I live now. So it's like they're getting more clever because sometimes I'm afraid if I don't answer it, that, you know, it's going to be an important call from, you know, somebody that I actually need to talk to because it's from, you know, where I am in Nashville or where I'm from back home. So that is tough, but I would be the one that would do something like this because I am perpetually on do not disturb. I'm not a phone talker.
Oh, same.
I don't like talking on the phone. So my phone just stays on D&D. My parents and my husband are set as favorites. So if they call, the phone call will come through. But otherwise, I mean, you gotta make an appointment if I'm going to talk to you on the phone.
I am the same way. I very much am on do not disturb. I do not pick up calls that I don't know. Even if I think that it's somebody that I'm expecting or that I should be picking up for, I feel like we live in a day and age where if you call me from a random number, you either leave a voicemail, which is less appreciated, or you just text me right afterwards and say, hey, Charlie, this is blank. I just tried to call you. And then I know to call you back, which actually does happen quite often, like with the bookers on Fox News. If they want to book me for a show, a lot of times they'll call me and I won't pick up because I don't know the numbers. And then they'll text me right after. And I'm like, okay, cool. But yeah, I get so many spam calls. And luckily, now the iPhone alerts you to what could be a spam call a lot of the time. But there are still times, like you said, where it's very targeted, Indianapolis, or for me, New York. They just know what they're doing these days. But on the other hand, I also feel for people who are so stupid that they fall for the spam callers. Like, I get old people, like maybe they don't truly understand what's going on. But anyone our age, if someone's like, hey, I need your credit card number because you have a delinquent bill, like, what is it? And you give it to them, like, you are just a straight up idiot.
Yeah. Or the ones that tell you that your social security number is going to expire if you don't call them back right away. You're just going to cease to exist.
Social security. That's great. Were there any other moments from the draft, Amber, that you particularly appreciated, whether it was from like the initial draft night or things you heard going on in day two or three of the draft?
I was just really impressed with the turnout that Detroit had. You know, when I went to the draft in Nashville here in 20, was it 2019 now? I guess it's been 5 years. Wow. And it was absolute madness, just Broadway, shoulder to shoulder people. I didn't know that record would ever be broken. And then Detroit just absolutely shattered it. Just the amount of people who showed up to watch the draft. And don't get me wrong, I love the NFL draft. I think it's fun. I love watching these guys' dreams come true. I love the coverage of it. I really enjoy the draft. I don't know that I would have that much fun just standing on the street waiting in the first round, you know, at 10 minutes and another 10 minutes waiting for teams to make their picks. But I guess that they had.
Were they able to drink?
I think so. I hope so. Because that would be.
Yeah, because I feel like that would be prime beer drinking time, right? While you're just waiting for the team to put their pick in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was at the draft party for Outkick on Thursday. Chad and Clay and Hutton did their show, and even toward the end of that show, it was like, okay, we've kind of run out of things to talk about. We're a few beers deep, and it really started to just kind of go off the rails and talk about other things. So I could totally see how that would happen at the actual draft. But hey, I mean, if it's just a big party and then there just happens to be a draft going on in the background, then, you know, all the better.
Yeah, no, I actually am with you. I thought the turnout was awesome for Detroit. I loved that Eminem came out for the beginning with Roger Goodell. I mean, Eminem is, when you think of Detroit, he is the quintessential role model representative for Detroit. And I was super excited. He's probably one of my, no, not probably. He is one of my favorite artists of all time. So I was super pumped to see him. And I'm sure Detroit was super excited to see the city represented in that way. And of course, then with like the legacy players and then Jared Goff was there. That was really cool to see. Okay. So Roger Goodell, he did not get the best reception at the draft. People were cheering for Eminem, but Roger Goodell, people were like, boo.
He always gets booed, the poor guy. And I loved the intro to the draft when he was talking to Eminem. And, you know, he's talking about bringing Eminem out and all this stuff. And I'm doing all this Detroit things. And Eminem's like, you know, they're still going to boo you, right? And they sure did. But, I mean, it's a tradition like no other.
Yeah, and Gretchen Whitmer, also known as the lockdown governor, was heavily booed as well, which makes total sense. People are finally waking up and able to pretty much stand up for what they believe in certain instances, not all. But Roger Goodell is getting booed for yet another reason, not just because of his showing up at the draft, but he is now proposing, Amber, the idea of an 18-game NFL season, which would add another week of play to the regular season, and then condensing further the preseason from now what is 3 weeks to 2 weeks. This is already, you know, we already saw that they made this shift, I guess at this point, what was it, a couple of years ago? They went from 16 games to 17 games, 4 weeks to 3 weeks. Now they want to take it even one step further in that direction. People are not happy about this. Even fans, who I'm sure would love to have another season of watching football, a lot of people are just understanding the conflict that comes along with this, especially for the players. Already we're seeing so many injuries among players who don't have the proper, I guess, tune-ups as the season's getting underway. And then just to add another week to the regular season, I mean, the only people that are proponents of this are the ones who are like, there's going to have to be two different bye weeks for players, which isn't probably feasible.
Yeah, I do think this is going to happen. This is something that Goodell and the league have been throwing around for a little bit. The good news is it's not going to happen until at least 2030. That's when the current collective bargaining agreement expires, at least unless something crazy happens. But remember, any changes to the schedule will have to be agreed to by the Players Association, which is why, like you alluded to, there will be some protections built in for the players, whether that be what Joe Burrow suggested, having two bye weeks, or another option is they could go kind of the NBA load management route, where a player is not allowed to play more than 16 or 17 games, or they put a limit on how many quarters they can play, something like that. And then obviously you could make exceptions for punters and long snappers and people who aren't being beat to death every Sunday. But of course, Goodell wants to do this. More games mean more money, means ticket sales, more money in media rights, possibly streaming. But if they're going to do it, I think they're going to have to make some compromises to put some protections in for the players. And the players are going to want more money for more games too. So that's something that I think that over the next 6 years or so, the Players Association is going to be kind of going back and forth with the league to see how they can make that work and still make it feasible and fair for the players.
Yeah, and I don't like the idea of load management for NFL players because I hate it for the NBA already, but the NBA has, I'm not going to do the math, but what, like almost like basically four times as many games as the NFL does. And so, you know, it makes a little bit more sense, but I would not want load management in a football game. I mean, that would just completely defeat the whole purpose of getting excited for each Sunday and watching your team play. If you're like, oh, the player's not even in, I can't imagine what that would do to ticket sales, right? People would be pissed off if their favorite player, let's say the quarterback, let's say he's not playing a certain game. You're like, oh, wow, I just showed up to see Patrick Mahomes play. And instead I'm watching Joe Schmo play because he's you know, needing his rest time on this given Sunday. I don't know. I guess, like you said, it probably will happen, but I just don't know if the disadvantages are going to weigh the advantages of making this happen. There's some things that just should be left alone, and I feel like this should be one of them at this point. And also, Amber, for the fan, also one thing is then putting the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend, which it would land if they added that extra week. President's Day weekend is already such an expensive weekend to travel as it is. It's one of the most expensive weekends in the winter because you have so many families who have the extended weekend who want to take their kid on vacation or get out of town. Now to add Super Bowl to that weekend, I mean, it's probably going to price a lot of people out of going to the game in the first place, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, but, you know, honestly, I think that ship sailed already. The Super Bowl tickets have gotten so outrageous that normal people can't go anymore unless you're willing to just make this, you know, unless you're willing to spend the price of a car or a down payment on a house to go to the game. This past season, I was feeling very optimistic about my Miami Dolphins about halfway through the season. And I just started casually looking like, okay, you know, my dad and I have always said, if the Dolphins go to the Super Bowl, we're going no matter what. So I started looking at tickets and I was like, oh, 10 grand a ticket. That is a lot of money for one football game, even if it is to see your favorite team. And then what if they lose? What if you go to the Super Bowl, it's terrible, and they get blown out, and you just spent, you know, 20 grand on two tickets to watch your team get beat up? So I really think that the Super Bowl has kind of priced itself out anyway. But the only good thing about happening on President's Day weekend is that then people would finally get the Monday after Super Bowl off work. So that's the one thing that everybody complains about every year is watching the game, drinking a few too many beers, whatever, and then having to show up at the office the next day. So that would be the only advantage to that. But yeah, that would definitely make, even if you just wanted to go to the city where the Super Bowl is being hosted, didn't actually go to the game, that's definitely going to drive the prices up, make traffic worse, that sort of thing.
No, you're so right about that. I mean, everything's expensive. Vegas this past year, tickets were stupidly expensive. Hotels were stupidly expensive. Just trying to get food on the Las Vegas Strip for families, I can't even imagine. You know, you've got a family of four, you got to feed them all three meals a day, what that cost certain families. So, you know, a lot of that, though, we do have to thank for our lovely administration, you know, for the lovely effects of inflation that they've imposed on us, not just during Super Bowl weekend. So there is that. Okay, well, we'll see what kind of changes the NFL comes up with. Again, like you said, probably not happening till later on this decade because the CBA agreement goes until 2030. But speaking of changes, Amber, the MLB making some changes to their uniforms. Rather, Nike is making some changes to their uniforms after it was discovered that they were heavily see-through. This includes the pants of the uniforms. So I'm sure there were some women out there who were happy about, you know, this discrepancy on Nike's end. But, you know, there's been a lot of people who talk about family friendly, probably not so happy about being able to see the valuables of some of these players in plain sight when watching the games. This is so funny that this would be something that Nike would not develop properly before releasing to the MLB. Like, this is just one of those things where you're like, you had one job, and that was to make sure that the uniforms were in a good condition in order for the athletes to be wearing, and that person obviously didn't do their job, Amber.
Those Yankees uniforms are so bad. Those gray, because you can just see every drop of sweat that they have. Like, last week, I went to the gym in this new gray crop top, right? I thought I looked so good. I loved it. 15 minutes into my workout, I looked disgusting. I had the sweat bib. Yep, there it is. I looked like that. I had the sweat bib, the pit stains, and all I could think about were those MLB uniforms and how no one tested them in a game or any physical situation. Like, look, when Nike took over the MLB uniforms in 2019, the Players Association advised against making any sweeping changes. In other words, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But Nike did what Nike does, and it tried to innovate something that was fine in the first place. But then they slap a cool name on it, like Vapor Premier. And they gave it to Fanatics to make. And initially, Fanatics took a lot of heat for these uniforms, but CEO Michael Rubin said, no, look, guys, we just made these uniforms according to Nike specs. This is a Nike problem. So what really needs to happen moving forward is they need to consult the players, at least the Players Association, and maybe have someone do a sweat test or just an initial run through, just like you would do with, you know, new gym pants or something before you debut those to the world.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, for example, when workout lines are being developed, they'll do like the squat test, right? You know, for girls that are lifting, you know, they want to see like these ultra tight pants they have on, make sure they pass the squat test, which is a couple of different things. One, it doesn't rip completely down the seam when you squat down. And B, it doesn't go completely see-through. But clearly no one did the squat test on these uniforms. They should probably just have like a full-on game, right? Where they give these uniforms. I don't know if they would be worth giving to a professional team, but maybe there's some part of the innovation team where they can say, okay, guys, instead of coming into the office for the day, you're all playing baseball, and mm-hmm. we're going to have you play in 90-degree weather. We're also going to have, faux rain coming down on the field. We're also going to have gusts of wind brought in by a massive fan. Like, all of the different weather conditions, they just put their team through to make sure that the uniforms can withhold all of the different conditions. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, a stress test.
Sounds like a fun day at the office, too, honestly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of, you know, a fun day at the office, Jerry Seinfeld has made his career of making people laugh. That's what he does best. And now he is pointing the finger at the extreme left for making comedy not funny anymore, which I can totally understand, Amber, because comedy has just gotten so lame these days because you can't say anything that's deemed offensive to, well, I guess there's certain groups that are more sensitive than others. But it's just all of the traditional jokes that were once told can no longer be told anymore. And now Jerry Seinfeld is calling it like it is. And we have a soundbite from him. So let's get to that.
It used to be you would go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on. All in the Family's on. You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to see stand-up comics because we are not policed by anyone. The audience polices us. We know when we're off track. Mm-hmm. We know instantly, and we adjust to it instantly. But when you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke. Well, that's the end of your comedy.
Is he speaking any lies here, Amber?
None detected. And, you know, it's funny that he brings up shows like MASH and Mary Tyler Moore and Cheers, All in the Family. I was very much a Nick at Night kid. When I was growing up, I feel like I watched more of the classic TV shows than I did even cartoons or kids shows. They were funny, you know, and I really, really enjoyed those. And I still like to watch them every once in a while. But I really think that golden era of the TV sitcom is over. Even shows that are more modern, like the cast has talked about this before of The Office, how you could never make The Office now. Michael Scott with his off-color humor, and he makes culturally insensitive jokes and gay jokes and fat jokes, and he makes fun of everybody, right? Or the show makes fun of everybody. But you can't do that anymore because, like Jerry said, when you present a script, it has to go through several groups, committees, sensitivity training type groups to make sure that everything is going to pass the PC test. And that just, it's hard to be politically correct all the time and funny all the time. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, when it's going through, like, these different tests, like you're talking about, like, the sensitivity group, the DEI, police, whatever. I mean, what types of people are on these committees as well? Like, is there anybody normal who can just say, wait a second, like, can we evaluate this from a different standpoint, like, where this is just funny? And we shouldn't be overly sensitive about it because You're right. TV shows have just completely gone from being over here to now over here, where I don't even see any comedy in shows anymore.
No, I'm with you. And I don't know who's on these committees. I'm very far removed from the Hollywood scene. So I don't know who's on these committees, but it is funny that, like, I think the one show that continues to get away with just whatever it wants is South Park. Somehow those guys have managed to avoid, I mean, they've been sued before. They've certainly gotten some flack for what they've done, but they've managed to avoid getting shut down or canceled. And it's the funniest show on TV. I wish we had more episodes. But they've kind of taken a hiatus, but yeah, that's like the one show that can still get away with it. And I'm not sure that there's a sitcom now. I mean, I don't watch a whole lot of network TV, but I'm not sure there's a sitcom now that even measures up to some of these classics that Jerry Seinfeld was talking about.
Yeah, I don't really watch TV like that either. There's no series on television that I watch on a consistent basis like we used to. Like, there's no appointment television for me anymore. Everything that I consume is streaming, whether it's through Netflix or HBO Max, things of that nature. And they're not the sitcom types. Like, they're more of the documentaries. They're the scripted series. So I you're right. I actually don't really know what exists out there anymore. But I will say, I'll agree with you. South Park is fantastic. I watch that all the time, especially when I'm traveling, because there's constantly marathons on. I still love Family Guy. They still have managed to keep their sense of humor, although I don't know if they're still being produced or if they're all reruns that I'm watching. I'm not entirely sure, but I love Family Guy. But one more thing that I was just thinking about this weekend, because it was on TV and I watched a little bit of it, and this isn't necessarily comedy, although there was a lot of comedy in it, was Jersey Shore. And I was thinking to myself, because it was the Jersey Shore family vacation that I was watching over the weekend. It was bizarre. First of all, some of those people on that cast have had way too much work done to their faces. They do not even look like remotely like they used to. But that's one thing, neither here nor there for this conversation. But I was thinking to myself how Jersey Shore would never, ever, ever fly these days. I mean, it was PC. There was nothing PC about Jersey Shore. It was, I mean, the Me Too movement occurred after Jersey Shore aired, but I mean, there was very, very common instances of non-consensual sex happening on the show on a regular basis. And it was cold. It was totally fine. Like, people were loving it. They were eating up this show. And I even loved it. I'm going to be honest. I still love the old Jersey Shore, but it would never, ever, ever fly these days. I mean, you had like Snooki doing cartwheels with no underwear on, and it was just, it was bizarre, but it was fantastic.
Yeah, I remember back in the day watching a few of those Jersey Shore episodes. I wasn't super into it. I actually didn't really get into reality TV, how much of it is actually real, but I didn't get into it that much until recently. About a year ago, I started watching 90 Day Fiancé on TLC. And I'm
so good.
Obsessed. Like, every single night, that's like how I turn my brain off, just watching 90 Day Fiancé. And there's so many different seasons and so many different spinoffs that, like, it's just, I'm going to have it forever to watch, because it's impossible to actually watch every single episode. But I love the reality TV. And maybe that's what's replacing sitcoms now. It's much easier to produce, probably cheaper.
Well, Amber, you'll appreciate this. Guess who DM'd me, like, I don't know, at this point, it was probably a month ago. I don't remember why he DM'd. I think he saw me on something on Fox. Ed.
Big Ed?
Big Ed. Oh. Big Ed DM'd me, and I was literally so excited, because I just love 90 Day Fiancé, and my mom loves, she is maybe one of the most obsessed people on this planet with 90 Day Fiancé. Like, she watches every single episode. So she was also very excited to hear I got the DM from Ed.
Ugh, I'm a little jealous. I don't know that I want Ed in my DMs, but I also kind of want to talk to Ed. I want to find out why he called off this wedding last week.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want him in my DMs, but I don't not want him in my DMs. Like, yeah, you know, from a fan of the show perspective, Completely. Okay, before I let you go, Amber, we just got to give some props to a UFC fighter, or rather just an MMA fighter. His name is Mike Dragic, and he is doing his part to make sure that the streets of Florida are safe. He subdued with his own bare hands over the weekend an 8-foot gator after it ran into busy traffic in Jacksonville. And I just want to say, not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah, that guy is so impressive. And, you know, he's a Marine Corps veteran. And don't try that at home, guys. Don't jump on any alligator's back.
Do not try that at home.
But he's a licensed gator trapper. There you go. You can see him. He chases this guy down. This is an 8-foot alligator in Jacksonville. Jumps on his back. He's barefoot. He said he was at a hockey game with his kids when he got a phone call that this alligator was loose and running out in traffic. So look at him. He just wrangles it like it's a puppy. It's really impressive. But yeah, this is what he does. The people will call him when they need a nuisance alligator, snagged and taken back to safety or away from people. There was another video that he posted where there was a 10-foot alligator, which was significantly scarier, at a school in Jacksonville. And that one put up a lot more of a fight. Yeah, there you go. That one put up a lot more of a fight. He had to use his pole to catch him, but it's like,
and
it's
that one's big. This one's big.
Yep, that one. I think they said that one was 10-foot.
How much money, Amber, would someone need to pay you for you to subdue a 10-foot alligator? Or is there just no money in the world? Or could we offer you $1 billion?
I mean, can I get some training first? I think if I'm still not confident, yeah, I could do it, but I would feel better if I had at least a little bit of training, you know? I've heard that if you can manage to flip them over, like their brain is so tiny they actually pass out. I'm not sure if that's true. Don't quote me on that.
Oh,
but I've heard that. But that you also have to figure out how to flip over the 10-foot alligator to begin with before you can ever even comes into play. So I don't know. I may be for $1 billion, but I'd feel more confident if I could get some training.
Well, guess who will be doing alligator research after the show? Me, because the brain tidbit, if that is actually true, I need to know more about it, because that's pretty fascinating. Okay, Amber, that's it. We have run through all of it. We've done sports. We've done alligator taming. We've talked a little bit about myself, which, you know, I always love. We took a little trip down memory lane talking about Jersey Shore. And to all of the comedians out there, please stop listening to the left. You have a responsibility to be funny, and we hope that you exercise that responsibility because we need some more good shows back on the air. And maybe then Amber will start watching TV again, like back in the olden days.
Give me something other than 90 Day Fiance, guys. I'm begging you.
Yeah, please, please give her something else. Or, you know what? And if not, then Big Ed, please slide into Amber's DMs as well, because I'm sure she'd love to hear from you. All right, Amber, have a good one.
Thanks so much, Charlie.
Outkick the Morning will be right back after a short break. Stay tuned.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, everybody, that's going to do it for this Monday. We've got 4 more days left through the week, then we're at the weekend. Isn't it sad when you're an adult that you start counting down the days till the weekend? Is that how it is for the rest of your life? And then it just continues. It's just like this cycle that never ends until, well, I guess retirement, which, you know, at the rate we're at right now, might be never, because we'll not be able to afford retirement with all of our taxes being sucked out of our bank accounts each and every year. Okay, anyways, I'm just going on a completely different tangent right now. What I should be saying, everybody, have a fantastic rest of your day. Make sure you're tuning in right here, 8 a.m. tomorrow for another brand new episode. And in the meantime, make sure you're following me on social media at Charlie on TV. Have a good one. See you tomorrow.